A good evening to each one of you. I hope that when you looked at your bulletin this morning, and I'm sure all of you do that before you leave in the morning, that it doesn't cause you great consternation to find out that the name written there on the 23rd isn't the one that's standing here. But Brother Alvin, for whatever reason, thought it was wisdom that he trade places with me, and I don't know what place he traded, but anyway, I'm here instead of he. How many remember last Sunday's sermon? Just one, two, three, good. Four, five, six. Boy, the hands just five, seven, eight, ten. Good. Until I learned to count really young. That little face continues to haunt me. And not that it's the words that I'm going to speak on tonight, but it gives me a reason to continue to consider the things that I say and do. And what I think ends up being what I say and do. Perhaps it was a week ago, I don't remember exactly when, Brother Alvin spoke to me and he suggested that maybe it was my turn to speak to you all tonight. I pondered what I should talk on, and I went through the week a majority of the week, with nothing on my mind, and was kind of upset, wondering what in the world was the direction that I was supposed to go. And finally I got a few free minutes, and I sat down with my notebook, and I have a habit of going from the very back towards the front with notes on sermons, and then I go from the front towards the back with the sermons that I get to listen to. And with finding my place where I might start writing, I noticed that the last sermon I had done was at Christmas time down in Houston, or just before Christmas. And I said, well, I don't want to have another Christmas sermon. That's not appropriate. And as I thought those words, there was these other, I'm sure you're just like me, you know, there's these little voices that run around in your head and they talk to you. And I was reminded that the scenario that I used there goes on past Christmas. It was one of those sudden thoughts. It's like a light bulb went on and, oh, that's what's going on. That happened to me some time back. As I was thinking about the events in the world and how they have transpired, the fact that our God, you know, it tells us in the scriptures, He's such a merciful God. And He's so kind that He's not like some great big echelon up here above that says, I know what's going to happen and I'm not going to tell you. But rather He says, this is my plan, this is what I want you to do, and this is how it's going to happen. And if you read in Alma, He tells you that you have your choice. You can follow His plan and have a pretty good time doing it, or you can follow your own plan and have a miserable hereafter. He told us very distinctly all the surroundings that would come about when Christ was born, so that there would be no mistaking it, and I don't mean to criticize those that lived then, but they mistook it. And as I pondered these things, I realized that God indeed speaks to us and tells us what's going on and what's going to happen next, if we'll listen. And there are those that will tell you that, well, He only speaks in the broad scope of things. You know, you get these generalities. He didn't do that with Christ when He told us about when He was coming. He gave us details like how many years from a certain event and who His mother was going to be and what her name would be and what would happen to the little children in Bethlehem, 2 years and younger. and the fact that he would go to Egypt. And all those things he told us before they ever happened, years and years before they ever happened. He still does the same thing. And I've been thumbing pages here and not getting anywhere close to the beginning scripture, but it's found in Mosiah in the 7th chapter, 45th verse. This is just one that I picked out of the, well, I don't want to call it out of the air, but picked out of the multitude of prophecies that were given in times past to show my point. Abinadi was sent to the people that were ruled by King Noah to warn them. And of course, they laughed him to scorn and chased him out of town. You might have said they sent him out on a rail, but he didn't get tarred and feathered, I don't believe. 2 years later, he came back to them in disguise. I don't know if that means that he wore a full beard or he shaved it off. I'm not sure which took place, or if he put on a different hat. But at any rate, they didn't recognize him. And it came to pass that after the space of 2 years, that Abinadi came among them in disguise, that they knew him not, and began again to prophesy among them, saying, "Thus hath the Lord commanded me, saying, Abinadi, go and prophesy unto this my people, for they have hardened their hearts against my words, and they have repented not of their evil doings. Therefore I will visit them in mine anger, yea, in my fierce anger will I visit them in their iniquities and abominations, yea, woe be unto this generation." And the Lord said unto me, "Stretch forth thy hand and prophesy, saying, Thus saith the Lord, it shall come to pass that this generation, because of their iniquities, shall be brought into bondage and shall be smitten on the cheek. Yea, and shall be driven by men and shall be slain, and the vultures of the air and the dogs, yea, and the wild beasts shall devour their flesh. And it shall come to pass that the life of King Noah shall be valued even as a garment in a hot furnace, for he shall know that I am the Lord. And it shall come to pass that I will smite this my people with sore afflictions, yea, with famine and with pestilence, and I will cause that they shall howl all the day long, yea, and I will cause that they shall have burdens lashed upon their backs, and they shall be driven before like a dumb ass. And it shall come to pass that I will send forth hail among them, and it shall smite them, and they shall also be smitten with east wind and with insects, and shall pester their land also and devour their grain, and they shall be smitten with a great pestilence, and all this will I do because of their iniquities and abominations." Well, as I look out here, I see that there's no one present that doesn't know what took place or hasn't read what happened to the people of King Noah, the fact that they were overtaken by the Lamanites, that in the process of all that, that King Noah ran into the wilderness, you know. He left his women and children behind just to save his own hide. And you'll find out that his priest burnt his hide. And not just his hide, but his entire frame. And he was consumed, just as was prophesied here. And you can find those things written in the 9th chapter of Mosiah. He had death by fire. And there is not one thing that was left out. I'm not going to read them all to you, but I'm going to turn there to that 9th chapter and read the 141st verse for instance. 141 to 143. "And it came to pass that after many days, the Lamanites began again to be stirred up in anger against the Nephites, and they began to come into the borders of the land round about. Now they durst not slay them because of the oath which their king had made unto Limhi. But they would smite them on their cheeks and exercise authority over them, and began to put heavy burdens upon their backs and drive them as they would a dumb ass. Yea, all this was done that all the word of the Lord might be fulfilled." Not one thing that Abinadi said went unnoticed. Every last event. And there's some of you that I know are quite sharp out there, and you remember that Alma was one of those that heard the words of Abinadi. And you remember that he took those that would follow him to the waters of Mormon, and ultimately he baptized those people, and they followed him. And they endeavored to serve the Lord. They had to run from King Noah to preserve their lives because he was that kind of a king. But they were also members of this same generation. And it's interesting to me to find out that the things that he prophesied to those people took place to that generation. That's one other thing. Let me back up for just one moment. You remember also that very last phrase, I believe that I read, that he said, Abinadi, that is, prophesied to them, telling them that the Lord would be very slow to hear their prayers. Well, go on down to verse 153 with me there in the 9th chapter, and it says, and they did humble themselves even to the dust, subjecting themselves to the yoke of bondage, submitting themselves to be smitten, to be driven to and fro, and burdened according to the desires of their enemies. And they did humble themselves even in the depths of humility, and they did cry mightily to God. Yea, even all the day long did they cry unto their God that he would deliver them out of their afflictions. Now the Lord was slow to hear their cry because of their iniquities. Nevertheless, the Lord did hear their cries and began to soften the hearts of the Lamanites, that they began to ease their burdens. Yea, the Lord did not see fit to deliver them out of bondage. And so you can see that another just side issue, in a sense, that not one thing that Abinadi prophesied was forgotten again, right down to the fact that God would be slow to hear their cries and their prayers to him. They tried doing it on their own by main strength and awkwardness to relieve themselves of bondage, but it didn't work because it wasn't what God had said would take place. Now, they did ultimately slip away, but it was not until God was ready to let that happen and they sufficiently humbled themselves. As I started to tell you that Alma's people were a band that broke off from this group, and you might think, well, because they became righteous, that they would not be subject to these same cruel treatments. It's quite the contrary. Seems as though I forgot to write down the verses. Maybe I can find them here shortly. And I'm not seeing it for some reason. I don't understand quite why. It's in the 11th chapter, probably is the reason I forgot to write it down. Suffice it to say that it's written there, and I'm going to let you go look it up. I always like to give homework. It's in the 11th chapter. And you'll find out that the people that were with Alma suffered the same afflictions that the people of the Lamanites overpowered them as well and took them as slaves and abused them and misused them. And ultimately, they too were given a reprieve from that sentence that had come to the prophecies of Abinadi, and they were allowed to once again be free. But not until they had suffered the consequences of their actions. And I guess that's one of the things I want us to see here tonight. This particular prophecy was to, I'm going to call it a nation. And like I said, there are those who say that God only tells us what's going to happen to, in general terms, to peoples. But as I read along, I noticed some interesting things also, and it's also found in that 11th chapter of Messiah, and I'm going to start with the 159th verse. There were some sons of Messiah, and they are named, and I'm not going to bother with that at the moment, as well as the son of Alma. that were well taught. Undoubtedly, they sat in Sunday school just like each one of you have throughout your lives, at least a portion of it, if not all. Listened to countless sermons. And in their infinite wisdom, decided that it was a whole bunch of garbage to be thrown away. Now the sons of Mosiah were numbered among the unbelievers, and also one of the sons of Alma was numbered among them, he being called Alma after his father. Nevertheless, he became a very wicked and idolatrous man. Just because you've been taught doesn't take away your free will agency to do what you very well want to. And he was a man of many words and did speak much flattery to the people. Therefore he led many of the people to do after the manner of his iniquities. I can only imagine what they were. As far as I know, they're not specifically identified. It doesn't make any difference. They were iniquities, and that suffices. And he became a great hindrance to the prosperity of the church of God, stealing away the hearts of the people, causing much dissension among the people, giving a chance for the enemy of God to exercise his power over them. What would it be like? I'll use myself as an example here. If I had been the one who chose not to follow in the footsteps of my father and decided to lead the way your hearts to do iniquity, that I would secretly show up at your house and talk to you about things and convince you that that's a bunch of nonsense, having to live by this law that's so stringent and doesn't let you to go out and party and just have a good old time whenever you feel like it. You know, come on, let's go have some fun. A little drugs don't hurt. Any kind of drugs. What would be the outcome of that? Who would listen to the words of my father? They would look at him and say, look at your son over there. Is that what you taught him and you're trying to tell us this? And believe it or not, that's the way people's minds work. And now it came to pass that while he was going about to destroy the church of God, for he did go about secretly with the sons of Mosiah, seeking to destroy the church and to lead astray the people of the Lord, contrary to the commandments of God, or even the king. And as I said unto you, as they were going about rebelling against God, because behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto them, and he descended as it were in a cloud, and he spake as it were with a voice of thunder, which caused the earth to shake upon which they stood. And so great was their astonishment that they did fall to the earth and understood not the words which he spake unto them. Nevertheless, he cried again, saying, Alma, arise and stand forth, for why persecutest thou the church of God? For the Lord hath said, this is my church, and I will establish it, and nothing shall overthrow it, save it be the transgressions of my people. And again the angel saith, behold, the Lord hath heard the prayers of his people, and also the prayers of his servant, Alma, which is thy father. For he hath prayed with much faith concerning thee, that thou mightest be brought to the knowledge of the truth. Therefore, for this purpose have I come to convince thee of the power and authority of God, that the prayers of his servants might be answered according to their faith. Now behold, can you dispute the power of God? Well, if I just had the earth shake out from underneath me, I don't suppose I would be disputing his power. For behold, doth not my voice shake the earth? And can ye not also behold me before you? And I am sent from God. I don't ever want to see an angel that's sent to rebuke me. It's difficult enough to behold an angel when he comes to give you instruction. But I hope never to see one when he comes to rebuke me. Although I would rather that than to receive the consequences. Now I say unto thee, go, and remember the captivity of thy fathers in the land of Helaman, in the land of Nephi, and remember how great things he hath done for them. For they were in bondage, and he hath delivered them. And now I say unto thee, Alma, go thy way, and seek to destroy the church no more, that their prayers may be answered, and this, even if thou wilt of thyself, be cast off. Now, I don't know whether you want to call that a prophecy or not, but for me, that satisfies the criteria of a prophecy. And it was to, in particular, one specific individual and four others that was with him, if I remember the correct number. That's not exactly a nation. So as I look upon things, it seems to me that God's willing to speak to anyone well, I started to say that needs it. I don't know. I guess that's the way the word to use. He's also willing to speak to those that desire to hear his voice and to know his commands firsthand. As I mentioned earlier, we have a God that is so merciful that he's willing to tell us anything. Well, I should qualify that, virtually anything. There are some things that he's not willing to tell us, but I'm not to that point yet. I don't know how many of you had thought of it in this regard, but did you realize that the Scripture tells you what you can eat? Has anyone ever thought about that? Turn to Genesis in the 9th chapter with me for just a moment, just for curiosity's sake. And I'm going to begin with the first verse there. Actually, we're going to pick up a couple of things there that was prophesied to Noah at the end of the flood and at the time that he was disembarking from the ark. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air and upon all that moveth upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things. But flesh with life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. Now, I'm not ready to go eat crickets. I'm not really interested in eating termites, mice, rats, or any of those other little critters. But here he says that anything that moveth is meat for thee. I suppose that includes mosquitoes too. And I know I'm being a little bit humorous here. But there is a reason for that. I want you to think of things to their fullest extent if possible. There's only one thing there that he says you're not to eat. And it says you're not to eat blood. For me, that's not a problem. I found out a long time ago I don't like it. I was in a very foreign land to myself and asked for a bowl of soup, and I thought I knew what I was asking for, and it was not exactly what I expected. I don't know how they do it, but they can take blood and make it like some kind of a leathery thing, and they had made a stew with it and rice noodles, and I'll have to tell you, I couldn't choke it down. I went hungry for a couple of days because of it. Just wasn't too interested in eating. I must confess to you that at the time that took place, I didn't even know that this was written. Now that's a poor excuse for me. I should have known. There's some other interesting things that God commanded Noah at that time also. Because he goes on in the fifth verse and he says, "And surely your blood of your lives will I require at the hand of every beast, will I require it. And at the hand of man, at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. And ye be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply therein." And as I read that little segment there, this was before the law of Moses. God said, if you murder, your life is required of you. Just that simple. Also, if I interpret that correctly, if we have some beast out here that becomes unruly and decides to take human lives, its life is required of it. We seem willing to go by that law and a little bit more reluctant to go by the other. I'm not sure why. I've heard the discussions pro and con saying that, you know, as Christians, we're to love one another. We're not to shed man's blood and all those kinds of things. And yet, as I read my scriptures, the only life I am not to take is an innocent life. That doesn't mean that I'm standing up here telling you that I want to become a hangman or anything of that nature. That's not my desire. I'm just telling you this is what's required by our God. That we take care of things properly. That we follow his guidelines and do it as he has said. God's commandments and his promises didn't stop there. God gave a promise to every human being on the face of the earth. God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, Behold, I established my covenant with you and with your seed after you. And we can all vouch for the fact that at some point in time, our lineage goes back to Noah. And with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth, and I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the token of the covenant which I have made between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and thee and the earth. And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, this is the token of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. The bow that he's speaking of there is, you know, the one that we all love to see in the sky is the rainbow. Generally, it tells us the storm has passed. But it was a promise, not just to me and you, but every beast, everything that creepeth upon the earth, that he would never again wash it away. Not only was that placed there for you and I to remember, But God says he put it there so he wouldn't forget. Now, I don't want to give him human traits and say that we have a forgetful God, because I don't believe that for 1 second, not even a millisecond. But he has established his covenant with you and I. And I believe he'll keep it. It didn't say there that there would be no tsunamis. It didn't say there that there would be no earthquakes. It didn't say there that there would be no great thunderstorms nor ice storms that would cause great floods, but never would it destroy all creation upon the earth. It's also interesting to me that he didn't promise something else, though. Let's go to Revelations for a second. 16th chapter. I suppose there might be some that say, well, this is just symbolic, but take it for what it's worth. It's written in the book. 9th verse. And men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of God, which hath power over them, these plagues. And they repented not to give him glory. Speaking of a time when there was a great heat. You go back a little bit earlier, and I believe it speaks of the fact that the sun was darkened and some other things there. Events that I'm not prepared to tell you precisely how they're going to take place. It's not my purpose. I'm not a scientist. I'm not even going to tell you when they're going to take place. And anyone who would is probably a little bit mistaken. But I'll give you a little scenario here of perhaps how that might happen. You and I know that there has to come a day when the life as we know it has to end. Now, for you and I, most likely that will be in a more common nature where we grow old and feeble and finally die and our bodies corrupt away. But there is a time that will come to pass when it says it will be, the earth will be rolled together as a scroll. You might phrase that as you've gotten to the last chapter of the book where it says the end, and you close it, and that's it. You could think of it that way. There's another scripture that says that not one thing that has been prophesied will be left undone. Revelation happens to be one of those prophecies. No one totally understands it, knows its exact schedule, or just exactly how it will take place. But there is that possibility that if you took a great ball of gas, which is what they say the sun is, and I've not been there and I don't intend to go to find out, but if you take a great quantity of gas, it'll sit there and burn as long as it's at a certain volume. And you can prove this with a gas can, but I don't want any of you to go out there and try it. But there comes a point when that volume becomes small enough to when what's left explodes, and there's a tremendous ball of heat from it. It's possible that the sun might do that someday, and man would be scorched. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. I'm not, at this moment, a prophet. I'm just saying that's one scenario. It's written. It will take place. How it takes place is up to God and when. I told you he was a merciful God, and he tells us how to live our lives. He tells us his plan. He also tells us those things that, you know, he does not appreciate. And as soon as I can find it, I guess that is Proverbs. I wanted to put it in the New Testament, but it's in the Old. Let's go to the 6th chapter of Proverbs for just a moment. And drop down to the 16th verse, unless you happen to be a speed reader, and start at the beginning and catch up with me. These six things doth the Lord hate. That's true. It's written in other than the first person, but still, these are the things that the Lord hates. Yea, seven are an abomination to him. Have you ever thought of a proud look being something that really irritates the Lord? A lying tongue. Well, we think of that one more frequently. We've all been taught to be honest. Hands that shed innocent blood, don't go there. A heart that deviseth wicked imaginations. I have to confess to you that there was a time that happened to me. We call it great anger. There's other places in the scriptures that tell us not to go there. Don't become angry. Because when you do, your heart begins to devise ways, as I put it at that time, to get even. They're wicked imaginations. Feet that run swift, that be swift in running to mischief. You know, it's fun to go out there and mash mailboxes. That's a thing to do. It's cool. No, it's not cool for the guy that has to go fix them either. There's 100 other things, and probably 1,000,000 other things that you could do that are feet that run to mischief quickly. Interestingly enough, those things tend to take place after dark. And if you were to go back into other places in Proverbs, it talks about those things that people do in darkness that we're not to be a party to. So the next time you're tempted to go out with the guys and just cruise, you might think about it. Is it really what I ought to be doing? Is that what God has prescribed for me as part of my life? Well, not only is that not the last thing that bothers him, but he says, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren. My son, keep thy father's commandments, and forsake not the law of thy mother. When mom says, don't do it, listen to her. When dad has laid the law down, don't wait till he goes off to work and then go do it anyway. There's a reason why he has said these things to you. No, that doesn't just apply to children. That applies to us adults too, because we had fathers that taught us when we were... I started to say when we were younger. Hopefully my father hasn't stopped yet. I'm sure there's things I can learn. Go to me over to Colossians for just one moment. I know I'm being a bit negative at the moment, but bear with me. That's a problem. Colossians doesn't have 6 chapters. No, it's 1 Corinthians, 6th chapter, 9th verse to the 20th. Not that the other scripture might not apply also, because it may very well. I just don't know what it says there. Of the first resurrection, that you may have eternal life. Now I say unto you, if this is the desire of your hearts, What have ye against being baptized in the name of the Lord as a witness before him that ye have entered into a covenant with him, that ye will serve him and keep his commandments, that he may pour out his spirit more abundantly upon you? You know, what have ye against it? Just that simple. If this is what is the desire of your heart and what you want. And now when the people had heard these words, they clapped their hands for joy and exclaimed, "This is the desire of our hearts." Those people knew what they wanted, and they went for it. Now, it didn't make their life a bed of roses. It didn't make everything a piece of cake. They still had a lot of struggles, a lot of temptations, a lot of worries, a lot of concerns. But that's where they began that walk with God. That's where he began to talk with them and tell them what they needed to do next. And he will do the same for you and I, if we'll let him. The things that Alma was teaching his people there fit right in to the glove that Matthew wrote about in the 22nd chapter. And I'm only going to refer to it. You can go read it later, 36 through 40. Where Christ gave the two commandments that he said you can hang everything, you can hang your hat on it. You can just depend on it from now on. And the first was to love God with all your might, mind, and strength. And the second one was to love your neighbor as yourself. If you wouldn't do it to yourself, then don't do it to them. I briefly mentioned a while ago that there is one thing that our Father will not tell you. It's also found in Matthew 24. I'm going to begin with the third verse. He was asked a question there. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, "Tell us, what shall these things be, and when shall be the sign of thy coming and the end of the world?" And Jesus answered and said unto them, "Take heed that no man deceive you." That ought to be your first inkling. Be careful. "For many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am Christ,' and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, and see that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in divers places. And all these are the beginnings of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved." I read through those things, and sometimes my heart just cries out, why does it have to be so hard? It says, because of the hatred that we have for one another, our love waxes cold. You know, we begin to plot against one another and desire to take everything away from the another. And why is that? Why does it have to be? And it's because of iniquity. But he goes on, there's still more that has to take place. "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." Well, we haven't been to all the nations yet, have we? When ye therefore see the abomination of desolation spoken of Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains, and let him which is on the housetops not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in these days. But pray ye may, that your flight not be in winter. Yeah, think about that just tonight, you know, when it's warmer than it was last night, but it's still pretty cold. And if you had to flee for your life, and you didn't have time to go back to the house and get your heaviest coat or get your overshoes or anything else. You're in your bedroom slippers and you're out there in that cold snow like they've got on the East Coast right at the moment. For then shall be the great tribulation such as not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor shall ever be. And except those days be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. But for the elect's sake, these days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in the secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For whatsoever the carcass is, there shall the eagles be gathered together. Let me skip a few verses here. Yeah, I guess so. Immediately after the tribulation of these days, those days shall the sun be darkened. Yeah, well, I mentioned that earlier, I think. And the moon shall not give her light. Of course, that's natural. The sun goes dark. What's the moon going to do? Since it's nothing more than a big reflector out there. And the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven shall be shaken. And then shall appear the signs of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trump, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. 36th verse, but of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Don't go asking him, when's the world going to end? Because he's not going to tell you. As best I know, if you have a need to know, there's nothing else that he will not make known to you. He's already provided us two books that we can browse at our leisure. We can browse it to the wee hours of the morning and learn of his ways and learn how he would have us live our lives. Or we can choose to cruise the streets and learn the ways of men and die therein. For you and I, that is our choice. There's no way that I can tell you all the details of his plan. There is no way that any man can do that. But as you read his word, his truth is going to become manifest unto you. And you're going to become keenly aware of all of his promises. All those things that his prophets have foretold. Remember, not one jot nor one title will be eliminated. Every last one of them will take place. Remember what James said. If any of you lack wisdom, ask of God. He's not going to shame you for asking Him. He may ask you, haven't you already read it? And then you'll understand what it was He was speaking about. But He's not going to rail upon you and criticize you and tell you how dumb you are and what a stupid idiot you are and all those kinds of things. He's just going to say, it's written. It's there if you had just looked. Did you not see it? That's what He's done to me. Yeah, sometimes it hurts. As human beings, we like to be perfect in our own way, you know, and know exactly what it is that God wants of us, and that our will is what He happens to want of us. That doesn't happen to be the way it works. His will is what we are to seek out. His will is what we're to perform. And if we choose to do that, He gives us the promise, and I read them to you at least once there tonight, where He says you'll receive eternal life. There are those who have glimpsed that for a moment. And I suppose that their English is better than mine, and yet all they can say is, I can't describe it. It's too wonderful. You'll be so happy there. That's what He holds out as a promise. Of course, He gives us the other promise too. If you choose not to do what He asks, if you choose to go the way of all man, or I shouldn't say of all man, but of man in general, to go it your own way, or as one of the songs said, I did it my way, then you can have the other promise. And it's eternal damnation. Sometimes described as eternal darkness. Another one described it as weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. I only recall one occurrence in my life that came close to being like weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. I wasn't very old at the time. I was in my very early 20s, and that's about the time your wisdom teeth come in. And I remember that I was in a service, and I was 150 miles from the hospital that could put you out to do that kind of surgery. And they very much needed to come out. You could say that those wisdom teeth were giving me bad breath maximus. And the dentist knew that they needed to be done, and he says, I can do it right here, but it's going to be a little bit painful for you. I'll give you as much Novocaine as I know how. And he did a pretty good job with the Novocaine, and he got them out. And I had this great big old lump here. Novocaine made it so you didn't feel a thing. Went back to work and thought that was nothing till the Novocaine wore off. Hurt too bad to cry. It hurt too bad to lay down. All I could do was pace the floor. If that even comes close to what weeping, wailing, and gnashing of teeth is, I don't want it no more. Fortunately, the first one that came out was the worst, and the second wasn't quite so bad. But think about things before you act. Ask yourself, what would God have me do? God bless each one.
Thank you, Brother Jim. We have a lot of bulletins out there, so if you didn't get one this morning, you can get one tonight. You need to pick one up. Monday night is our study class as usual. Tuesday, the quilt group will meet at Carrie Garr's home at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday's prayer service at 7 p.m. here. Friday, Generation Found will meet at Milo and Sina Hauschnick's home at 7 p.m. And Saturday, there are two events. Baby Boy Shower for Paul and Amanda Case. It'll be at 10 a.m. to noon. It's given by Aubrey Case, and they're registered at Baby R Us. Again, it's here at church. And then, in the afternoon, the YPCL will meet here at the Temple Lot at 1, and ice skating at Lion Creek, and it says there's a charge of $7. I want to remind you about our penny collections for Yucatan, and I think Neva's got fixed those up with a box out there that's even bigger than the other one. We filled that first one. Now we need to fill another. Also, Sweetheart Dinner is Friday, February the 11th at 6:30 p.m. Bonnie Case has tickets, $2 each or $4 for the family. And you can get those tonight, right? All right. And I want you to remember those that are in need of prayers. Continue to remember Margaret. Lauren is having, Lauren Bryant is in Veterans Hospital. We saw him this afternoon. He's having a heart catheterization tomorrow. And by ultrasound, they already know that his two carotid arteries are 90% blocked. So, and they don't know yet what they're going to do about that, if anything. So remember Lauren. Also, Edith Case has surgery tomorrow, bladder surgery. And it may possibly be cancer